This is the Advanced Selling Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to help business sales teams grow their business with modern strategies and philosophies. Now, your hosts, Bill Caskey and Brian Neal.
Welcome back to the Advanced Selling Podcast. Bill Caskey.
Brian Neal in the Advanced Selling Podcast tanning booth. These lights are setting me on fire behind me. Jeez.
Really?
Oh, my God. I'm sweating.
What if these were on here?
Seriously. Well, those have covers over them. These are like right up my shorts. It's brutal. You have tan lines on my neck.
Well, for those of you who have never joined us before, not only shame on you, but here's what we do.
We
emanate from the Indianapolis, Indiana studio, Selling Podcast studio. And we do it every week, and we release, hopefully, content that helps you grow your business, grow yourself, your own skills. If you're a VP of sales or sales manager, we would urge you, encourage you to send this out to your whole team. If you're a salesperson, make sure your manager's hearing this.
We have a lot of managers that actually play the Advanced Selling Podcast in their Monday morning meetings or sales meetings, which I think is a phenomenal idea. If you're a salesperson, even, and your sales manager is looking for something to do, or you think it needs to be a little bit more fun to go to your sales meeting, I'd suggest playing the Advanced Selling Podcast if I were you.
That makes it fun. That
it
changes
sure
everything.
It does.
Hey, the other day I was talking to my daughter. You know, she's in the process of applying to colleges.
And yes.
She's right there at the point where she's getting notified, yay or nay. And she's been pretty successful so far. She's seven for seven or six for six. But there's one that she has not heard from.
Yeah.
And it's irrelevant which one it is. But it's
irrelevant to you.
Suffice it to say, it's not an online school.
It's not an online school, and it ain't cheap.
Where there's no limit. But the point is that we were talking the other day at breakfast about what if she gets in, what if she doesn't get in. Of course, the one that she hasn't heard from is the one she really wants to go to.
Of course.
That's the way it always is.
And the one her dad wants her to go to, sort of.
What's that?
The one her dad wants her to go to,
The one her dad kind of wants her to go to. And kind of went there himself. But the point is that I said, you know, think about a college admissions person. They get, let's just say, 2,000 applications for 600 openings.
Yeah. Yep.
And I said, at some point, I suspect they all start to look alike.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their difference is either it's a male or it's a female. But after that, the essays all start to run together. I can't imagine you writing an essay that's going to be so stark, unbelievable that it's going to stand out.
And if you got a name like Pat or Chris, you can't even tell the male female thing. So then you're
that's
host, right?
Aaron, Pat, Chris.
You know, Pat. Okay.
So, so I said, you know, the thing you have to remember is I don't know if you did enough to stand out. Of course, that offended her and upset her a little bit. And
sure.
I think, God, I probably didn't say that right.
Maybe not.
But I said, whether you, whatever college you go to, you're going to have internships, you're going to try to get into classes, you're going to try to get into scholar programs and things like that. You're going to have eventually have to try to find a job.
Yep.
It's a game of standing out.
Ooh.
And distinguishing yourself from the rest of the pack. Seth Godin writes about this a lot in his blog, is how do you distinguish yourself in a world that is all commodities?
Mm.
And so I was telling her about this guy. He's a client of ours. His name is Brandon Girard. He lives and works up in Grand Rapids, Michigan area.
Yep.
And we were talking about that on the phone the other day. He says, you know, I never realized that what I did something in college that I think helped me get my first job. And I said, well, what was it? He says, well, it was my dad's suggestion. He says, you're looking for a sales job. He says, why don't you go out and interview 20 sales managers in this area, ask them what are the five things that make up a great salesperson, and write those down, and that will help you learn what it takes to be successful in selling.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did that. Before he went on any interviews, I think he ended up with 12 sales managers, five things each, 50 or 60 things. Some were the same. But he has this list of what makes a salesperson a great salesperson. So his first interview, he goes out and he says to the person interviewing, they said, well, have you had any experience in selling? And, of course, he says, no, I just graduated from college. But one thing I did this summer that I think will help me is I went out and interviewed 12 sales managers like you, sir, and I'm interested to know what is it that makes a salesperson successful. He goes on. He says, the guy stops him halfway, goes, job offer.
Yeah,
you know,
he's done.
We want to hire you.
Is.
And
unbelievable.
I don't actually know if he got that job. But the point is that shows a distinction.
Yeah.
It shows ambition. It shows this guy's serious about his craft.
Yep.
And I think how many of us really go to that extent?
It's outstanding.
And probably we do in other areas.
Yeah.
But I thought that's really interesting. And I thought that was a good topic for going above and beyond and really outside your comfort zone a little bit.
No doubt about it. And you think of the things that we've been teaching here on the podcast, and as we move into 2012 and we're focusing on this becoming an expert, to me, that's the one of the easiest ways to stand out is to start to engage people in a different manner than you're used to. And that's really what that was. So this kid, where a lot of kids would call the sales managers and say, "Hi, I'm looking for a sales job. I'm reaching college grad, and I'd like to bring my resume by." This kid's instead doing a research project, and I want to know what makes salespeople stand out. What separates the elite from the best, and the best from the good, and that sort of thing. He's not only got new connections with all those sales managers he talked to.
That's right.
He's got great knowledge and data that probably none of his other fellow students have.
None.
And just by taking the initiative, just by doing it, forget what he learned, he stands out.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. And now he's had really 12 interviews. He's in the game. He's in a different
totally
game.
Totally in the
now.
Game. Yeah. That's
so
great.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Shout out to
Brandon. He does a great job. He's a very good sales professional, and he's a proponent of ours and disciple of ours.
And a listener.
All
right. Topic.
Okay. Let's talk about a topic today that we get a lot, you know, in our selling philosophy and methods. We talk a lot about budget.
Yep.
And it used to be that we were always taught in sales to ask the question, "Well, Mr. Prospect, what's your budget for this?"
Yep.
And we always know that when we ask that question, we're probably not going to get a straight answer.
No, if any answer at all.
If any answer.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll say, "Well, it really doesn't matter because I need this." And we'll say, "Okay, great. There is no budget."
Yep.
So therefore, unlimited. Or they'll get, some arbitrary number that some financial hack sat down at the beginning of the year and said, "Okay, we got $1,000 to budget for sales training or for whatever."
Yep.
So sometimes the number, it's meaningless, really.
Yes.
So the question becomes, well, how do we ask the question, or do we ask the question, and how do we position the cost of our product in light of the fact they probably have some number in mind, whether it's a written budget on a spreadsheet or whether it's a mental budget they have in their mind?
Yeah, right. Very good.
Because I think a lot of times we just don't ask the question, and then the first time money gets discussed is when they say, "Yeah, I saw your price. God, that's too high.
Yeah, it's out of whack."
It's out of whack.
And I like to explore the inner game side of that first. Okay. I think that's always important to start with, as we always do here. And you have to first think about your comfort level with the whole subject matter, just like you said, because I think a lot of salespeople, like it or not, just aren't comfortable with that scenario. They might fear the resistance that comes with it. They may think that they're higher priced and they have a propensity to want to defend that higher price, or they may just think that it's really, really difficult to do. It's just hard to do when you're the higher priced person. And so from an inner game standpoint, I'm always, always trying to counsel and coach our clients to think from a mental standpoint that if the company would let you, you'd charge 20% more than you're asking for, because you see that much value in what you're bringing, even with you. And that's where I try to internalize it and personalize it for them. You're worth the premium. You being involved alone brings a premium, not to mention that your product that you sell
that's
is probably
point.
Much better. Does that
good
make
point.
Sense? I had a great example in a peer group I'm in. A fellow friend of mine who runs a company has a salesperson that he paid, and he wanted to groom this person actually to become either the leader or president of a certain division of his company or the next sales manager. And this person's out selling. He called him last week for a deal, and he said, I need your permission to go below list price for this particular client."
Salesperson said this?
Salesperson calls the president of the company and says, "I need your permission to go below list." He says, "What for?" "Well, we've got a good relationship. We're already in there. We're the incumbent, but our competitor's in, and they're discounting below us, and the customer asked me if we could, match them." So he calls to see if we can match them. So then my friend, the president, says, well, tell me about the usage and how much." And so they start going through the math of how much this customer uses and the actual discount they're talking about. Guess how much, and this is an amazing thing. This is a $10 million company. Guess how much a month the salesperson needed to discount to match the competitor?
What $10
million percent? Company. Give me the number. $10 million company. $50. The salesperson, exactly. You're like, what?
$50.
The salesperson couldn't overcome or upsell
$50
premium a month. Mm-hmm. And that says so much about the salesperson's inner game.
That's right.
And this person, not only did they say, "Okay, wait a second, you can't be doing this," and B, you didn't set yourself up well to run any division or be our sales manager anymore, right? Whoops.
That's bad.
And so what a great coaching time for this salesperson
is.
To say, look, man, you have to think the opposite. So if you're a salesperson listening to this that has the propensity,
you should be offended by that.
Absolutely. You should. The second the person says $50, you got to go, $50? Are you serious?
Yeah, hang on a second.
Let me get my wallet out. Yeah, let me sell my watch. I mean, so that's an inner game thing. So for all you salespeople that listen to this, that run, and you know who you are. You sit there and you take stuff from customers. You go, oh, I better go ask my boss if we can discount. Right. You've got to stop doing that. It's a mental exercise, first of all.
And yet, we also know that people are money conscious.
Yes.
And we can't ignore the fact that people do look at price.
Amen.
And we're not saying that that your customer shouldn't ever look at price. But if you have distinguishing differences in what you offer, and you are the number one distinguishing difference, my manager at a place where I learned a lot of this and learned how to sell was, he said, you know, you should be offended. If you're not, you mean we're not worth $50 a month?
That's right.
We're not worth a half a percent?
And
you know what? He would go in and say, so wait, let's say Mr. Lowe's, Mr. Home Depot, we're not worth a half a percent more to you.
Right.
And if they said, no, you're really not, then we have other problems.
You got other problems. Yeah. It's not a good ideal client for you anymore.
Yeah. So here's one of the things we worked on today. When you get past the mental game, which I think always crops up in the whole money discussion, is what does it mean when someone says, I have a budget?
Yeah, right.
And we are proponents that you always must try to find out if the problem that the customer says they have has any cost to it.
Yes.
And so if a customer says, you know, I've got this problem, pain, issue, whatever, and I say, well, what is the cost of that problem to you? And they say, well, I don't really know what the cost is, which is usually what they'll say.
Yeah, they don't know.
You have to have some kind of a sequence to determine if there is a cost to the problem.
Yes, no doubt.
And if you don't, if you take, well, I don't know, Brian, I don't really think it costs anything, but I'm willing to spend money to fix it, you're always going to be high.
Yes.
And we talk about it here. It's the $10 word that I'm fond of. The word is juxtaposition.
It is a $10 word.
It's $10. We used to be a quarter.
It used to be a dollar.
It's up, baby.
Yep, it's up now. Inflation, juxtaposition.
Juxtaposed. Juxtaposition.
Yes, onomatopoeia.
And what that means is they're juxtaposing the price that you are charging with the problem that is there to be solved. And if it's $10,000 versus zero, they're always going to opt for zero.
It's very good. And we have to be careful here, not careful. We have to be disciplined to, if they don't know what it actually costs them, we still have to keep the pain or the problem, the element that we're trying to fix, very close to the investment that we're going to be making. Even if they don't know how much it costs, we still have to, the question still goes back to them. Well, is it worth 20 grand to have a reliable service provider for this particular thing or whatever that is that you do?
It's good.
They have to be next to each other. There's a couple of tests I've talked about in the past. As you're thinking about this, and you don't have to use these words specifically, but you can, or just use the framework that I'm going to teach you. That is, number one, we want to first see if we're even reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see if what we're going to be doing is even it's a ballpark sort of thing, but it really is a reasonableness test. It's simply to say, you know, if you make 50 grand a year and you're looking for houses and that your household income is 50 grand and you fall in love with $1 million house, you can't afford that house. It's unreasonable. Right. Even though you love it, you want to have it, and you love everything about it, can't do it. It's unreasonable. If we pass the reasonableness test and people say, oh, yeah, okay, we can keep talking, then we're good. Now we can head into the more specific number to say, what's the logical side of that? So there's reasonable, then there's logical. The logical part is to say, is it worth, you know, spending 30 grand to make this particular problem or pain go away?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. So I think the lesson that we came with today in the class that I taught was you at least have to have the discussion about it. Don't worry about whether you get it down to a spreadsheetable dollars and cents currency kind of thing. But if you're not having the discussion about what it costs the person to have the problem, what's the reasonableness factor, what's the logic, if you're not having any discussion, then it will get back to, hey, your price is too high. Can you sharpen it? Can you lower it by 10%?
No doubt about it.
So if I've got a $1 million problem, you come in and $10,000 is your quote, and I really do believe that $10,000 will solve my $1 million problem, I'm not going to be fighting you on price.
That's right.
I'm just not. So just make sure that, like Brian says, take it through that filter and just at least have the discussion about money. I think you'll find that the more you have it, the more comfortable you'll become in it, and the less anxiety it'll create.
No doubt. And if you're the salesperson that constantly calls your boss to ask for a discount and go below list price, go do something else.
Stop.
Like the rest
do that.
Of the people.
It's bad for your self-image.
It's bad. So, okay, you can find us at advancedsellingpodcast.com. You can find us on caskey1.com.
Make sure you go to caskey1. There's a lot of good stuff there. You can sign up for an email newsletter that we send out once every couple of weeks, and it's got videos and blogs and texts and podcasts and all sorts of
bunny
things.
Bunny rabbits and everything.
Bunny rabbits, yeah. Oh, if you haven't seen the bunny rabbit clip,
go see the bunny rabbit clip.
Advanced
and join
Selling
us
Podcast
on LinkedIn and our Advanced Selling Podcast group.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Advanced Selling Podcast presented by Caskey Achievement Strategies Indianapolis. Join us each time we record a new podcast by going to iTunes,